Good evening. My name is John Ween, attorney and legal instructor with Blue to Gold Law Enforcement Training, here today for warrantless home entries. First things first, we got our disclaimers. We wouldn't be attorneys if we didn't have disclaimers. Your laws and your SOPs may be more restrictive. Understand, we teach to a national standard on these webinars. Why? Because we are presenting nationally. When we come to your state, we will have state-specific case law. We will have state-specific examples of what you can and can't do and why. If you work in a state where your state courts interpret your state constitution in a far more restrictive manner, understand, just because the Supreme Court said you can do something does not necessarily mean you can. You have to know the federal standard, you have to know your state standard, and you have to know your own individual policies. If you work in a state like California, where at least on paper, they are a lockstep state, meaning their state court is to interpret the state constitution in keeping with the federal standard, all good. Florida, same way. Arizona, same way. If, however, you work in a state like New Mexico, New York, New Jersey, Washington, Oregon, a state where the state constitution is interpreted in a far more narrow fashion, understand, you have to know your state law as well as the federal standard. Okay? All right. Have us out to your state. We'll make it state specific. We'll get you your state specific search and seizure survival guide. If you have any doubts, push it up the chain. Rely on the critical decision-making skills and leadership abilities of those in your chain of command. If you have the time and opportunity, push it up the chain of command. If for no other reason, spread a little bit of that liability love around. Speaking of liability, this course is legal education, not legal advice. I'm an attorney. I'm not your attorney. I'm not telling you what to do in any given situation. I am telling you what the law says. Here is our agenda for today. A little curtilage action, then we're going to talk about hot pursuit. After that, destruction of evidence, the prevention of escape, and the emergency aid doctrine. So let's get into it. Curtilage. What is curtilage? That's like where you leave your milk out too long, it spoils, pour it out, a bunch of curtilage. Why are we talking about that today? Well, close. Curtilage is that area that is so intimately associated with the home, the area that is so physically proximate to the home that it is protected like the home itself. And the word curtilage is derived from curtilage, which is French for courtyard. Think about the physical attributes of a courtyard, and that may help you to understand the physical determination of the extent of curtilage. So where is curtilage? What is curtilage? How is curtilage? There is a four-factor analysis in determining the extent of curtilage. How far does curtilage extend from the home? And I will tell you, under the federal standard, this is important. It is important that we know how far curtilage extends out around from the home. Why? Because when we are talking about real property, earth, ground, tierra firma, the land beneath my feet, the only physical property, earth, ground, tierra firma, that is constitutionally protected under the Fourth Amendment is curtilage. The only earth that has Fourth Amendment protection is curtilage. Is it curtilage or is it not? And curtilage is protected like the home itself. The home has the highest level of Fourth Amendment protection, and curtilage is protected like the home itself. And so, am I on curtilage or am I not? If I'm on curtilage, highest level of Fourth Amendment protection, darn near. If I'm not, no level of Fourth Amendment protection. It is all or nothing. And so I need to know, am I on curtilage or am I not? And this is a totality of the circumstances analysis. The first factor, physical proximity. Physical proximity. How close is the land on which I am standing to the home? Is the land adjacent to the home? Is it physically proximate to the home? Does it abut the home? Factor number two, is the area enclosed or can you walk on it? Is there an affirmative barrier created surrounding the home, encompassing the home, enclosing the home, and actually creating a physical barrier, a land mass between them out there and my residence? Factor number three, what is the use to which the area is put? And factor number four, site screening. First up, adjacent. How close are we to the home? The closer you are to the home, the more likely a court is to conclude that you are on curtilage. Take this residence here. Pretty typical residence, suburban dwelling. Let's say this was your home, and you looked out your front window here, and you saw someone standing in these bushes right next to where those two crosswalks, I'm sorry, those sidewalks intersect. Would you think that was weird? Would you say that's weird? Why is somebody standing out there in those bushes next to where those sidewalks intersect? That's on my front yard. I don't like that. Yeah, probably. Now, let's say you looked out that front window there, and instead you saw someone standing in those bushes directly outside that window. Is that going to be a very different conversation? Is that going to be a conversation involving your Glock? Maybe your SIG, maybe your Remington 870. Yes. Why? Because we understand that the closer a person is to your home, the more intrusive it feels. And so, factor number one, arguably the most important factor in a totality of the circumstances analysis, how physically proximate to the home is the land? Is it adjacent to the home? Does it abut the home? The closer you are, the more likely a court is to conclude that you are on curtilage. And yes, it is a totality of the circumstances analysis. So why do I say that that physical proximity is the most important factor? Well, because that factor will still establish curtilage to the exclusion of all others. Physical proximity to the home will always be a factor determining some degree of curtilage to a house. Even if there is no enclosure, even if there is no use, domestic use, even if there is no site screening. So, how close are you to the house? Factor number two, is the area enclosed or can you walk on it? Right here we have a home. There is a 4 foot tall wrought iron fence surrounding, enclosing, encompassing an area of real property earth around the house. Now, this 4 foot tall wrought iron fence does not completely enclose or encircle all the property that this homeowner owns, but rather an area, a buffer zone of this homeowner's property surrounding the home. This homeowner has taken affirmative proactive steps to send a message. And that message is me in here, you out there. If you want to come in here, I have designated a specific area, a point of access that I expect you to take, that gate. Then I have designated a front footpath, an area that I expect a guest to approach my home by. Is the area enclosed or can you walk on it? And then finally, factor number three, right? The use. What is the use to which this area is being put? In determining the extent of curtilage, it may be helpful to ask yourself, does the area in question involve those intimate activities associated with domestic life and the privacies of the home? Are we using this land for domestic activity. What does that mean? Well, domestic activity, where you sit and read your morning paper, where you drink your morning coffee, where your children play, where you sit out and have family meals or cook food or engage in your hobbies. These are the intimate activities associated with domestic life and the privacies of the home. And so, what is the use to which this land is being put? And then finally, site screening. What affirmative, proactive steps has the homeowner taken to keep out the prying eyes of passersby, up to and including Johnny Law? You have here an 8-foot-tall fence, alternating recessed and raised slats. The slats abut one another. The fence is in good repair, no gaps, no holes, no broken slats. In fact, one might go so far as to call this a privacy fence. Has this homeowner taken affirmative, proactive steps to keep out the prying eyes of passersby? Yes, indeed, they have. Fun. All right. Well, we're back up. Can you hear me now? Wonderful. So, the hell was I saying? Oh, yeah. So they go and they say, "Hey, can we come onto your property? We'd like to see what we can see." They walk onto the yard, right? They go to the backyard and they try to look into Kendra's backyard. But Kender has built an 8-foot-tall privacy fence, completely enclosing his yard. But these officers are young. They're excited. They're full of the vigor for law enforcement. They're hungry for justice. And so one of the officers goes over down next to the fence, crouches down slightly, and allows his fellow officer to use him as a human footstool. The officer climbs up on his partner and tries to look over into Kendra's backyard. But Kendra has taken the additional steps of hanging camouflage netting all over his backyard. Not to be dissuaded, the officer on top pulls out a 60x monocular and looks through the camouflage netting to see marijuana growing in Kendra's backyard. So the question is this: were the officers reasonable? Now, their argument was, we never went into Kendra's backyard. We never physically entered his curtilage, did we? No, they didn't. No, they didn't. But let me ask you, if you looked into your backyard and you saw this kind of action happening in your neighbor's yard, would you feel like that was a little unusual, abnormal? Might you go so far as to say, that's unreasonable? Yes. And so did the court. Despite the fact that the officers never physically entered Kendra's backyard, they absolutely infringed upon a reasonable expectation of privacy by doing this sexy stuff right here. Now, guys, I always tell you, right? Constitutional violations aside, I want you to take a moment and look at this picture. And ask yourself, is there someone in your agency with whom you work who would do this with you? If you have that special someone in your life, I highly recommend screenshot this picture right now, snap a picture of it on your cell phone, and send that person a text message and say, thinking of you, bro, thinking of you, sis, hashtag curtilage, you and me. Friends forever. B F F F. Challenge that relationship, right? Cherish that relationship, guys. They don't come every day. The officer's actions, climbing the fence and using that telescope, were intrusive and constituted an unreasonable search. In the instant case, the growth of California grass in appellant's backyard created a natural barrier behind which he could reasonably expect privacy in his own backyard from his neighbor's gaze. The appellant, by allowing a thick brush of California grass to grow, which effectively prevented observation into that part of the backyard where the marijuana plants were located, exhibited a reasonable expectation of privacy against observations by persons positioned in his neighbor's property, and the reasonableness of that expectation is only reconfirmed by the intrusiveness of the police officer's conduct. California grass. Am I right? An officer received an anonymous tip that the defendant was growing marijuana in his backyard. The backyard was enclosed by a 10-foot-high fence, making it impossible for the officer to observe the area from the ground. To circumvent this, the officer secured a private plane and flew over the defendant's house at an altitude of 1,000 feet, from which he was able to see and photograph the marijuana plants. Based on these observations, the officer obtained a search warrant and seized the marijuana plants. Was this a reasonable intrusion? Flying over in FAA-approved airspace, where any member of the flying public could be, right to be, right to see. Plain view is nothing more than right to be, right to see. Any member of the public who flew over in this area could look down and see what this officer saw. And so can you. The officer's aerial observation did not constitute a search under the Fourth Amendment. The court reasoned that the defendant's expectation of privacy in his backyard was not reasonable because the observation was made from public, navigable airspace, where any member of the public could legally fly and observe the same area. In an age where private and commercial flight in the public airways is routine, it is unreasonable to expect that the curtilage will not be observed from the air at altitudes of 1,000 feet. United States versus Dunn. In this case, officers got information that Dunn was buying up a bunch of precursor chemicals used in the production of methamphetamine. And so they drove out to Dunn's property. He owns some acreage. They drove down a road that delineated the exterior property line of Dunn's property. As they were driving down this road, they saw a barn on Dunn's property. They pulled over, they got out of their vehicle, and they started walking onto Dunn's property toward this barn. Before too long, they came to a barbed wire fence. They climbed over the barbed wire fence and continued walking deeper onto Dunn's property. After a bit, these agents came to another barbed wire fence. They climbed over that as well and continued walking deeper onto Dunn's property. Before too long, they came to a third barbed wire fence. They climbed over that barbed wire fence as well. They walked up to the barn. The barn had its barn doors standing open. The DEA agents looked into the barn through some camouflage netting that Dunn had hung up, and they saw a meth lab. Using these observations, they later applied for a search warrant. At no point did they enter the barn. At trial, it was established that Dunn's home was a half a mile to a quarter mile away from this barn. Question. What structures have curtilage? All structures, some structures, or only homes? Only homes have an area extending out around them that are protected, that area that is protected like the home itself. It does not make sense to say my shed has an area extending out around it that is protected like the home itself. That doesn't make sense. So, all domiciles are structures. Not all structures are domiciles. Domiciles have curtilage. Structures do not. And so the question here is, if Dunn's house is a half a mile to a quarter mile away from this barn, what are we standing on? We are standing on open fields. And do open fields have any level of Fourth Amendment protection? No, they do not. So, did the officers have a right to be where they were from a constitutional standpoint? In the eyes of the Fourth Amendment, yes, they had a right to be where they were. They were standing in the green in open fields. Open fields have no constitutional protection, and so they had a right to be. Do they also then have a right to see? Yes, they do. Right to be, right to see. Now, that's difficult for a lot of officers to wrap their minds around. But again, I tell you, the only ground, real property, that is protected by the Fourth Amendment is curtilage. One court described open fields and curtilage, that relationship, thusly. Curtilage is the exception to the rule that all ground is open fields. Everything is open fields unless it's curtilage. The Fourth Amendment protects four things: people, structures and curtilage, data, and possessions. Person, I know what that is. Structures, I know what those are with the walls and the roof. Data, I got that one figured out. And possessions, yep, I know what those are. So curtilage, 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 curtilage. In Dunn, had the officers walked into the barn, would that have changed things? Yes, it would have, because then they would no longer be in the green. They would be entering a structure. And structures are also protected by the Fourth Amendment. In this case, they didn't. They had a right to be, and so they had a right to see. Now, I will tell you guys, this is an area where some state constitutions differ. Texas, under their state constitution, applies curtilage-like protections to non-curtilage areas. Okay? All right. Steve says, wouldn't that be trespassing under state law? Yep, it would be trespassing under state law as long as you could establish the requisite mens rea. A violation of state law has no impact on the constitutionality of a governmental action. So, Texas, they apply curtilage-like protections to fenced commercial areas under the Texas state constitution. Washington, Oregon, they do as well. Louisiana, interestingly, because Louisiana, New Orleans, and the like, they have a lot of controlled access courtyards into multi-family dwellings. And so Louisiana, under the state constitution, applies curtilage-like protections to those areas that are not true curtilage. Tennessee applies curtilage-like protection to fenced farming areas, again, under the state constitution. So keep in mind, what we're talking about here is the Fourth Amendment. Your state constitution may have additional restrictions. The barn and the area around it were not within the curtilage of the house, and therefore the agent's observations did not violate the Fourth Amendment. The evidence obtained was admissible. The barn was 50 yards from the house's fence and 60 yards from the house itself. That's inaccurate. We believe that curtilage questions should be resolved with particular reference to four factors: the proximity of the area claimed to be curtilage to the home, whether the area is included within an enclosure surrounding the home, the nature of the uses to which the area is put, and the steps taken by the residents to protect the area from observation by people passing by. Site screening. Use. Enclosure. Proximity. So, curtilage color codes, guys. From now on, when you walk up to a residence, I no longer want you to see the world in just black and white. I need you to see all the colors of the rainbow. When you walk up to a residence, what is green? Open fields. What is yellow? Right? Limited access. And what is red? Red is dead. Green is good. Larry says, totality of the circumstances. You got it, buddy. Four-factor analysis, totality of the circumstances. Curtilage color codes. Red. Red is dead. If you want to go into the red, you need consent, exigency, urgency, emergency, or a warrant. Yellow. Yellow is that area that is curtilage. However, there exists in our society an implied social license to approach a residence as long as you act in keeping with established social norms, as long as you act in keeping with knock and talk and routine call for service, these well-recognized and narrowly defined exceptions. And then green, green is good. Green is open fields. What is green? What is yellow? What is red? There's your example. Green, yellow, red, right? Now, this yellow is pretty broad. My recommendation is this. As much as possible, take the directmost path to the main point of access. You don't have to walk like a tightrope walker. You don't have to walk like a penguin from the green to the front door. However, take the directmost path to the main point of access. Be reasonable. Don't walk up near the front of the house and start sniffing those garage doors. Take the directmost path to the main point of access. Can you guys think of any situations where this side of the house here would be yellow instead of red? Meaning, I can convince the court that I objectively believed these homeowners were expecting uninvited guests to come up and knock, not on the front door, but rather on the side door, or maybe even in the backyard. Okay, Victor, I like it. Mother-in-law house. William, I like it. Signage. Yes, sign that says go to the back. Party in the back. Yard with open gate. All right, okay. What if I'm doing surveillance on this residence for 2 weeks, and during those 2 weeks, every time somebody comes up to that house, they come up and knock on that side door. Nobody ever knocks on the front door. Is it reasonable for me to walk up and knock on that side door as well? Beautiful. I will tell you, yellow stays yellow only so long as you act in keeping with established social norms. If you want to go up and approach a house at strange hours, hours that are outside those we would consider people are reasonably expecting uninvited guests. If it's outside those hours, the standard is going to be everything is red. Everything requires exigency to access. Now, if under the specific facts and circumstances of your case, you tell me, no, John, no, Judge, this is actually yellow at 3 a.m. Well, that's going to be a lot of articulation. And you say, well, here's the articulation. For a month, I did surveillance on this residence. And for a month, no one approached this house except between the hours of 11 p.m. and 4 a.m. That is the only time anyone walked up and knocked on that door. And so I, too, walked up and knocked on that door at 11 p.m. The lights were on. The music was bumping. I heard people walking around inside. I saw them. And so it was reasonable for me to conclude that at this hour, despite the fact that it was outside established social norms, nevertheless, in this particular case, I was reasonable to conclude that they would receive uninvited guests at this hour due to my personal observations. All right. So, what color are you standing on here? Spoiler alert, the colors are already up there. You're standing on green. What is the physical proximity to the house? It's a good distance. What is the enclosure? There is none. Now, could this homeowner actually have increased what a court would consider to be curtilage around his house had he taken the affirmative proactive step of building a fence enclosing, encircling, encompassing an area of land around his home? Sure, presumably he could have. But because he did not, well, all we've got is the four-factor test. There is no enclosure. What is the use of this area near the barn? Is it the intimate activities associated with domestic life and the privacies of the home? No. Storage, implements of husbandry, farm equipment, things of that nature. You compare that to what I've got designated as the red, hot tub, Adirondack chairs, dining room table, barbecue, fire pit. Those are the intimate activities associated with domestic life and the privacies of the home. And then site screening. You see those big trees there. You see those planters, the hedges planted in those planters. All of those things were put in the location that they were, not to prevent prying eyes from seeing that barn, but rather to prevent the prying eyes of passersby seeing into that house. That is curtilage. What is yellow? What is red? What is green? So what happens if you move the shed closer to the house? Does the shed somehow develop curtilage? No, but it is enveloped into the home's curtilage based on its physical proximity to the house. So now that we have an idea of how to define curtilage, let's talk about what you can do on curtilage. There's two reasons to be on curtilage: the knock and talk and the routine calls for service. So what is a knock and talk? A knock and talk is approaching a residence and acting in keeping with attempting to establish consensual contact with the occupants of the home. I walk up, I knock on the door, I wait briefly for admittance, and then, absent invitation to linger longer, I turn around and leave. I go up, I knock on the door without a warrant. I make contact with the occupants of the home and I say, "Hey, this is who I am. This is what I'm doing. I was wondering if you might have some information about this. Any issues in the neighborhood? Anything that I should know? What do I see? What do I smell? What do I hear? Maybe I ask for consent to enter the home. May I come in so we can talk about this with some degree of privacy? Maybe I'm invited in, maybe I'm not. But this is a knock and talk." And when we talk about the knock and talk, we talk about the Girl Scout rule. When you approach a home staying in that yellow area, if you want the yellow to stay yellow, you need to act in keeping with the Girl Scout rule. When you approach a home and you rely on knock and talk, do no more than what a reasonable, respectful Girl Scout would do. Do not go where a reasonable, respectful Girl Scout would not go. Do not do what a reasonable, respectful Girl Scout would not do. And Kenneth, if you're armed with Thin Mints, I have no doubt you will be far more welcome than if you come with just a badge. Complying with the terms of traditional knock and talk does not require fine-grained legal knowledge. It is generally managed without incident by the nation's Girl Scouts and trick-or-treaters. Florida versus Hardiness is the case that gives us the Girl Scout rule. Notice, it is the Girl Scout rule, not the trick-or-treater rule, Trick or treater, little bastards all hopped up on sugar, they will all run all over your place. No, Girl Scouts, reasonable, respectful, just like you guys. In Florida versus Hardiness, officers got information that Hardiness was growing marijuana in his house. And so they decided they were going to go out and they were going to do a knock and talk, see what they could see, smell what they could smell. This is Hardiness's home. What color are we out there on the front sidewalk out front of the house? Beautiful. Green. How about that horseshoe driveway? Yellow. Love it. What about back near that, I don't know, what is that? A Ford Explorer? That green Explorer? Okay. Red. How about over there by those two windows? Red. All right. So in this case, officers walked up. They knocked on the door. There was no answer. So they left. They went and they got a warrant. So what's the problem? Why do we have United States Supreme Court case law on this? Because when they approached that door, they didn't come alone. They brought somebody with them. They brought Frankie the dog. And Frankie, sweet, sweet Frankie, alerted at the threshold of that door, and that was the probable cause they utilized to seek a search warrant for Hardiness's house. Now, Hardiness argued this is a violation of his constitutional rights. The government responded, free air sniff. The threshold of the home is a public place. United States versus Santana established that. And the United States Supreme Court said, how would you feel if you looked out your front door and you saw someone marching a bloodhound up your front path or going back and forth across your front yard with a metal detector? Does that offend established social norms? Does that go beyond what an uninvited guest would do? Does that violate the Girl Scout rule? Then the answer is yes. If you act outside of keeping with established social norms, societal expectation, then the yellow is no longer yellow. The yellow falls out from beneath you and becomes red. The floor is now lava. The use of a drug-sniffing dog on the defendant's porch constituted a search within the meaning of the Fourth Amendment. The officers were gathering information in an area belonging to Hardiness and is immediately surrounding his house. In the curtilage of the house, which we have held in joyous protection as part of the home itself. And they gathered that information by physically entering and occupying the area to engage in conduct not explicitly or implicitly permitted by the homeowner. To find a visitor knocking on the door is routine, even if sometimes unwelcome. To spot that same visitor exploring the front path with a metal detector, or marching his bloodhound into the garden before saying hello and asking permission, would inspire most of us to, well, call the police. Knock and talk at 5 a.m.? Three more knock and talks? Nope. Remember, comply with established social norms. Once back in the curtilage, the officers then upped the ante in their attempts to convince French to come out of his home by, among other things, continuing to knock on his front door, locating and knocking on his bedroom window frame, and yelling for him to come out of his home. As such, the officer's behavior was plainly inconsistent with Hardiness, which clearly established that an implicit social license sets the boundaries of what acts officers may engage in within the curtilage of the home, absent exigent circumstances. Officers went to a suspect's home and knocked on his door because they had probable cause he committed strong arm robbery. He stole a skateboard. He ripped a kid's skateboard out of his hand. The officers then proceeded to the suspect's house, identified by their victim. They went up, they knocked on his door. He told the police to leave multiple times, but the police refused. Issue? This is the Brizuela house, right? This is the Brizuela house. The sidewalk here in front of the home. What color are we? Green. Beautiful. How about that front walkway up to the front door? What color is that? Yellow. Love it. How about the front yard? Or that side yard there in front of that big window? Red. All right. And so the officers walk up, they knock on the door. Brizuela comes out of this sliding glass patio door out onto the front porch. There is a gate between the officer standing and knocking on the front door and Brizuela. Hopefully, you can see it there in the picture. Brizuela says, "Get off my property." Absent exigency. The only authority that these officers have to be on curtilage, the area that is protected like the home itself, is if they act in keeping with the Girl Scout rule, if they act in keeping with established social norms. If a Girl Scout comes up to your home and knocks on the door and you say, "Get off my property." Would the Girl Scout leave? I hope so. If they don't, we've got an issue. And so, when Brizuela told the officers, "Get off my property," he revoked the implied social license. The yellow fell out from beneath them and became red. And the only legal authority you have to stay in the red is if you have consent, not here, a warrant, not here, or exigency, urgency, emergency. And there is no exigency, no urgency, no emergency. And so, legally, the officers should have left curtilage, that area. Protected like the home itself. But wait, you say, they had probable cause to arrest Brizuela for a violent felony, robbery. And I say to you, Peyton versus United States established that the severity of the crime alone will never allow a warrantless, non-consensual entry into the home. Severity of the crime alone does not justify you staying in the red. If you're in the red, you need consent, exigency, urgency, emergency, or a warrant. Otherwise, get off the red and back to the green.
You cannot come into my property without any incident.
Sir.
Okay, listen,
no,
listen.
No, you listen. We came over to talk to you about something
no,
that happened.
Okay, about what?
Did something happen between you and a kid today?
Okay, how do you know? How do you come in and blame me for something I got nothing
I
to do?
I didn't say we blamed you.
Oh, what do you
I said
what
I'm
are you
asking
doing?
You about it.
Okay, you know the law? Okay, you need to, in order to come in into my
okay.
property, you need to come in.
No, listen. We are asking you questions about it because somebody said you were involved.
Don't knock the door. Don't knock the door.
Oh, I'm gonna knock it.
Don't knock the door.
Oh, I'm going to.
Don't knock the door.
Hello, Sparks, please.
You need don't open the door, sir.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Hi. Can you open the door so I can talk to you for a minute?
Sir.
It's probably for your own safety.
Hey.
Hey.
Gun.
Hey.
Gun! Hey! Hey!
Put it
down!
Down! Put it down!
Put the gun down!
Get out!
Put the gun down!
Shoot.
Put the gun down!
Shoot.
the gun!
Put the gun down!
Put the gun down!
Put it down.
Move, move, move! One down, one down! Sparks, 311, shots fired, one down. Eli, you good?
Yes, I'm good.
Okay, I'm good. Sparks, 311, shots fired, one male down. Officers are code 4. We have one down, and we have one in the house. Start medics.
Bad day? Yep, that's a bad day. Brizuela's front porch, which, as the district court found, led only to Brizuela's front door and patio, not to any other residence, constituted protected curtilage. Qualified immunity denied. Even assuming the officers had probable cause to arrest Brizuela, the record does not demonstrate that any exigent or emergency circumstances existed here, and therefore, the officers should have left. In this case, officers got information that Morgan was growing marijuana. There was an established policy with this county that said when you respond to a residence to conduct a knock and talk, for officer safety reasons, you will establish a perimeter around that house to ensure officer safety on every knock and talk. Enter on the back to ensure that there is no one trying to ambush officers. And so they went to Morgan's residence and they took up that position. They took up that position. One officer went to the backyard and plain view into a back window. He saw marijuana grow. Now, James is saying weird policy. I like the policy from an officer, a pro-law enforcement standpoint, right? We want our officers to be safe. We want them to be, you know, preventing ambush. Yeah. But the issue is this. The policy completely disregards the Fourth Amendment. It gives no consideration to Fourth Amendment protection of a citizen's rights, right? Yeah. Yeah. All bad. But policy tells me to do it. Don't care. Can you shine a flashlight into a garage? Does using a flashlight turn what would otherwise be plain view into a search requiring Fourth Amendment justification? Nope. Using a flashlight falls under the sunlight rule. If, but for the veil of darkness, you could see what you were looking at, using a flashlight does not change plain view into a search. Using a flashlight to look inside a home falls under the sunlight rule. Now, Michael, he says, my old department on warrant arrests, one officer would stand at the back of the property and the other would go knock on the front door. Always felt odd. Warrant arrest. Are you reasonable? Yes. A warrant arrest is in effect a warrant, right? An arrest warrant is in effect two warrants. It is one to make that arrest and also to gain access to a person's residence of record as long as you have reason to believe that they are presently home. And so, if I want to go into the red, what do I need? A warrant? Consent? Actions, urgency, emergency. There you go. What if you stood on a chair to see inside the garage? Would a Girl Scout do it? Then neither should you. Absent, agency, urgency, or emergency. What if Shaq could see inside? Is that okay? That's reasonable. Plain view doesn't require you to avert your eyes. Love it. How about looking under a garage door? As I walk up to a residence, can I just get down on my hands and knees and take a little look inside? Yeah, that's not going to fly either. Why? Because it offends established social norms. A Girl Scout wouldn't do it, and so, absent exigency, urgency, or emergency, neither should you. Think the artificial vantage point or the peepin' Tom rule. If you are on curtilage and you start doing stuff that makes you feel like a pervert, chances are that's a search. We take great caution in rendering impermissible the actions of an officer employing only his or her, bare physical faculties. However, the officer did not just sway to one side or the other to observe something. He did not even merely bend over slightly to observe something. He got down on his hands and knees with his head almost touching the ground and looked into the garage. We, therefore, conclude that the officer's actions constituted a warrantless search, which violated the personal and societal values protected by the Fourth Amendment. You can be nosy, excuse me, just not intrusive. Okay. So the knock and talk, let's talk about calls for service. Calls for service allow you to make a limited intrusion to investigate. However, entries into red curtilage areas or homes require exigency. Every opening into the home, garage, window, door, whatever, every opening into the home has a red barrier blocking it. You do not pierce that red barrier absent consent, exigency, urgency, emergency, or a warrant. Hot pursuit. You may chase a fleeing suspect into their home for any felony or misdemeanor if exigency exists. If you initiate an arrest in a public place, a arrestee, suspect, cannot defeat an otherwise validly initiated arrest by retreating into their home. United States versus Santana is the case. In this case, officers got information that Santana was selling heroin out of her walk-up apartment here, in that building with the stars on it. They watched her engage in several hand-to-hand drug transactions. They walked up on her, announcing their intent and authority to arrest her. She turned around and fled back into her house, and officers chased her into the home, tackled her in the front hallway, arrested her, searched her incident to arrest, as well as the immediately surrounding area, recovering narcotics, drug paraphernalia, and U.S. currency. These were introduced against Santana at trial, and she argued this is a violation of my Fourth Amendment rights. This is my home, the place that has the highest level of Fourth Amendment protection. And the United States Supreme Court said, no, these officers were reasonable. They were reasonable. Why? Because she was not inside her home when the hot pursuit began. The arrest started in a public place. No curtilage in front of the home. Walk-up apartment. So that was not an issue. By retreating into a private place, her house, defendant could not thwart an otherwise proper arrest that had been set in motion in a public place, the threshold of her house, and that since there was a need for the police to act quickly to prevent the destruction of narcotics evidence, there was a true hot pursuit, and therefore the warrantless entry into the home by the police to make the arrest was justified, as was the ensuing search incident thereto. Peyton versus New York. New York passed a law that said where law enforcement officers have probable cause to arrest a subject for a felony, they can make a warrantless, non-consensual entry into the home. Officers identified probable cause to arrest Peyton for armed robbery, a felony. They proceeded to his residence. They knocked on the door. There was no answer, but they heard a radio playing inside. They had no warrant for Peyton's arrest. They had no search warrant for Peyton's home. They had probable cause to arrest him for a felony. And so, under New York law, they kicked in his door, entered, and swept through the residence looking for Peyton. He was not home, but they did find several live rounds and shell casings sitting on the dining room table that matched those recovered at the scene of several of his crimes. They used those against Peyton at trial, and Peyton argued this is a violation of my constitutional rights. That's my home, the place that has the highest level of Fourth Amendment protection. You had no arrest warrant, no search warrant. Why did you go in my home? And New York said, the people of New York have spoken. And they have said, because of the severity of felony offenses, it is reasonable for law enforcement officers to make a warrantless and non-consensual entry into the home. Peyton appealed to the United States Supreme Court, and the United States Supreme Court said no. The United States Supreme Court said you cannot legislate away a constitutionally protected interest, especially when we are talking about the Fourth Amendment protection of the home, the place that has the highest level of Fourth Amendment protection. Basically, what did Peyton hold? Peyton held that the severity of the crime alone will never justify a warrantless, non-consensual entry into the home. The Fourth Amendment prohibits the police from making a warrantless and non-consensual entry into a suspect's home in order to make a routine felony arrest. Remember, body snatching requires exigency. If you want to snatch somebody out of their house, you must articulate exigency. In this case, officers get a call from an early 20s female who advises she's just been assaulted by her neighbor. Officers respond to the apartment complex. They knock on the door, they make contact with her. She has an apparently broken nose, heavy bleeding from her face. She explains, hey, this old drunk who lives next door to me in the apartment next door, he's always calling the police, always complaining about how much noise we're making. Tonight he came over, he banged on my door so hard I thought he was going to break the door open. I opened the door and he's standing there in nothing but his underwear. His hair is all wild. I smell the booze coming off of him. And I say, what are you doing? And he says, you guys are making so much noise, I can't stand it. It's driving me crazy. Stop it. And I say, leave me alone. Get away from my house. At which point, he steps into my apartment and hits me in the face. And I think he broke my nose. What crimes is she alleging? James says, burglary, unlawful entry with the intent to commit a crime, assault, felony. Okay. Arizona, entry unlawfully with the intent to commit the theft or felony therein. Many states, entering unlawfully with the intent to commit a crime therein. I love those. Yeah, any crime. So, is your prosecutor going to go with aggravated assault or aggravated battery for broken cartilage? Maybe they will, maybe they won't. You tell me. So I've got either aggravated assault, aggravated battery, whatever you call it in your state, simple assault, whatever you call it in your state, and or burglary. Some states will require you to not also charge the lesser included offense. Others will allow you to stack the deck. Regardless, in most states, we've got a burglary offense here, so at least that felony. Should we go knock on this guy's door? Does this guy need to go to jail? Seems that it does to me. If I go and I knock on this guy's door and he answers and he tells me, screw you, copper, I ain't telling you nothing, do I have probable cause to arrest him? Physical injury? Injury consistent with her story? All right, let's go knock on his door.
Get out of here.
I hit that
Get
wall.
Get on the ground.
No. They hit that wall so hard, I thought they were going to come through the wall. Stop.
What you gonna? What you gonna?
Okay.
Bad day? Bad day. Now that's tough, right? That's tough. Because he's standing right there, isn't he? He's standing right there in an open doorway. And you're telling me that there's some kind of an invisible force field preventing me from getting him? Yeah, that's what I'm telling you. Every opening into the home has a red barrier blocking entry. Everyone. And if you want to pierce that red barrier, what do you need? Consent, exigency, urgency, emergency, or a warrant? In this case, tasing him in the groin, not a viable option. Not a viable option. So what was the outcome here? Well, the subject fell backward, hit his head on a stool, threw a clot, had a stroke. The agency paid out $8 million. The primary officer was criminally charged. Tell me, what was he criminally charged with? Tased him in the genitals. Felony assault. Right? Because he used what? An ECW? An electronic control weapon? Yeah. That's what Taser is calling it now. That's what Taser is calling it now. And also, that serious bodily injury, right? That GBI. Yep. Ultimately, the primary officer pled guilty to simple assault. So he's a convicted criminal now. The backup officer resigned. 10 seconds of these officers' careers, and they are changed forever. Their agency is $7 million poorer. More than that, because they, you know, had to fight to defend this. Right? Maybe. Yeah.
Get out here, right?
Yep, it's a bad day. 10 seconds of this officer's careers. Agency $7 million poorer. This man, if you believe his attorneys, his quality of life has changed forever. He went from being a fully functioning member of society to now needing 24-hour-a-day care for the rest of his life. Primary officer is a convicted criminal. Backup officer resigned. 10 seconds of the career, and that can happen. And I struggle with this because I look at this and I don't see ill intent. I don't see ill intent. I see hesitation. I see uncertainty. I see a lack of training. Now, Daniel says that they'd ask to come in and give him consent. All good? Well, that's the question, Daniel. If we can't do this, if I can't tase him in the groin and then make an entry in there, what can I do? Can I get a warrant? Yep. Can I ask him, hey, can you step out into the hallway so we can talk about this? Can I ask him, I don't want to put your business out here in front of all your neighbors. Can I come in? We can talk about this. I can get your side of the story. In a conversational tone, I asked. And he responded, yeah, come on in. Am I past that red barrier? Reasonably? There you go. Charles, it wasn't a warrior spear thing. It was a Maori war club. This guy's right here is the cost. Lack of training. We have expressly refused to read Santana as allowing physical entry past Peyton's firm line without a warrant or an exigency. Santana's description of the doorway of a house as a public place, we have said, shouldn't be misinterpreted to mean that officers have a right to enter and arrest anyone standing in an open doorway without a warrant. Body snatching requires exigency. Misdemeanor hot pursuit requires exigency. Prior to 2021, there was a circuit split. Is the severity of the crime a factor in a hot pursuit analysis? Lange versus California established, yes, severity of the crime is a factor in a hot pursuit analysis. Felony hot pursuit into the home. If all you have is misdemeanor offenses, if you want to make a warrantless, non-consensual hot pursuit entry into the home, you must articulate a misdemeanor plus standard. Misdemeanor plus some form of exigency. Misdemeanor alone, not enough. The flight of a suspected misdemeanant does not always justify a warrantless entry into a home. An officer must consider all the circumstances in a pursuit case to determine whether there is a law enforcement emergency. On many occasions, the officer will have good reason to enter, to prevent imminent harms of violence, destruction of evidence, or escape from the home. But when the officer has time to get a warrant, he must do so, even though the misdemeanant fled. Some of the recognized exigencies in case law: protect occupant from harm, protect suspect's escape, imminent destruction of evidence, safety risk to officers, safety risk to public, render aid to an occupant, or any other compelling need. If all you have is misdemeanors, give me a compelling need specific to your case and tell me why this needed to happen. I didn't have time for a warrant, Your Honor. All right, guys, let's talk about destruction of evidence. Entry for destruction of evidence is permissible if you have PC that evidence is inside the home. You need to balance the level of intrusion against the infringement on the individual's privacy. You must diligently pursue a search warrant, and you have reason to believe that evidence will be destroyed. Okay? Again, you're making a warrantless, non-consensual entry into the home, so there's going to be a high degree of judicial scrutiny. You need to understand that what we're talking about here, extreme situations, exigency, a lot of governmental interest in what it is you're doing. Convince a court of the reasonableness of your actions, or don't do it. Fair enough? Fair enough. Okay? Give me a moment here. Oh, interesting. Wow, okay. Now, I want to touch on emergency aid, guys, because that's important to me, right? That's important to me. And I think that's what you guys are going to be dealing with most often. So I don't want to shortchange you, but I also understand we got places to be. All right, so your emergency aid exception, right? Your emergency aid exception. You have an objective reason to believe that an emergency exists, and your conduct inside the home has a nexus to resolving that emergency. Okay. What does this tell us? This tells us if I respond to a call for service, family member says, hey, I haven't seen granny in a while. I go up, I knock on the door. There is no answer. I call the phone. I hear it ring inside. No answer. Mail's building up outside the house, right? Okay. I walk over. I peek into the garage. Yeah, I did it. Her car is in there. I call a loved one. I say, hey, Any idea where she might be? No. I go talk to the neighbor. I say, hey, have you seen Edith recently? He says, no. I always see Edith outside watering her begonias, and I haven't seen her recently. And I say, okay. I call local hospitals. She's not there. I call the fire department. I say, hey, you transported recently? Not there. I go into the residence with the code provided by family member. I want to reduce damage to the home. I go through. I check the first floor. She's not there. I check the second floor. Edith, 90 years old, not there. And so I say, well, she must be in the attic. I then go into the garage. I get a ladder. I carry it back up to the second floor. I climb up on the ladder. I push open the attic access. I jump up into the attic, pull myself up, and I find a meth lab. Are we good? No, right? Because why? I am acting unreasonably. That's not in resolve. That's not going to resolve the emergency. It's not reasonable for me to think that Edith is in the attic. Come on. Come on. In the early morning hours at a casino hotel, an officer responded to a report from security about an armed robbery involving two males in a room on the 70th floor. The officer, fearing an armed gunman and potential victims, called for the SWAT team. They found the hotel room a door ajar, and upon entering, discovered a handgun in plain view inside a duffel bag, along with documents identifying the defendant, who was later charged with unlawful possession of a weapon. Okay. The entry was lawful, under the emergency aid exception, and plain view evidence, gun, not suppressed. Significant governmental interest? Yeah. In every Fourth Amendment analysis, we weigh the governmental or societal interest against the infringement on the individual's rights. The perilous and exigent circumstances required to prompt action based on the credible information at hand. We conclude that the trial court erred by viewing the events through the distorting lens of hindsight, rather than viewing those events as they appeared to an objectively reasonable police officer who had to make immediate decisions in the face of a credible threat to the safety and lives of others. Based on the evidence presented at the suppression hearing, the police acted within the scope of the emergency aid exception to the warrant requirement. Officers responded to the defendant's home after a dropped 911 call. The defendant denied making the call and claimed to be alone, despite three vehicles in the driveway and an abrasion on his knuckle. The defendant became increasingly agitated and refused the officer's request to enter the home. When the officers attempted to enter without consent, the defendant tried to block them, resulting in a struggle and his subsequent arrest for obstruction and resisting arrest. What do you guys think? Are we reasonable here? Now, I will tell you guys, this case is a great example of the importance of articulation. A great example of the importance of articulation. Because is it accurate to say, I looked down and saw that he had cuts on his hand? Sure, that's accurate, but that's the amateur leagues. I want you guys operating the professional leagues. And a professional does what? A professional articulates effectively. And so the officer in this case said, I looked down and I saw that he had fresh cuts on his knuckle and it was actively bleeding. I asked him, what happened to your hand? He looked down at his hand, looked up at me and said, I cut it earlier gardening. I looked at him and I said, sir, you're lying. That cut is fresh. It's actively bleeding. And your rose bushes look like crap. We're coming in. That is great articulation. Entry lawful under the emergency aid exception. Great articulation.